Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 148. Oh, I am in London, and my jet lag has turned into just regular land lag. So I apologize if I sound tired right now and might ramble at the beginning of this intro. What? All right, I just woke up again. Okay, feeling good. I'm very excited that we're shooting a bunch of stuff for the BBC America show, our year in review, which is going to air Christmas Eve at 9, 8 central on BBC America. I'm here talking to David Tennant, Simon Pegg, Thomas Dolby, a bunch of really cool people for the Nerdist TV specials. So check that shit out, please. Also, our live shows are on sale. Go to nerdist.com/calendar. Our next show is January 6th, the 9:30 Club in D.C. And as part of SF Sketchfest on January 28th, you should go to sfsketchfest.com, by the way, and see their amazing, tastic lineup that they just announced for this year. There are so many incredible acts on that I'm not even going to try to prioritize them. They're all equally amazing. So go there if you live in the Bay Area, or even if you don't. That is an incredible festival happening in January and February. Do I sound like a robot right now? I feel like I sound like a robot in my headphones. I apologize if I sound like a robot. Ooh, I better take the Voight Kampff test. Yeah, Blade Runner reference. Up top. I just up-topped myself. That's what you gotta do when you travel. It gets lonely. Sometimes you gotta up-top yourself. Hope the maid doesn't come in while I'm doing it. I would like to send a round of hugs over to the table that belongs to Audible.com. Audible is this week's podcast sponsor. Now, my book is on Audible, and if it weren't for Audible, I would not have been able to consume a lot of the books that actually went to research into my head to end up writing my book. I spent a lot of time in my car in Los Angeles, and Audible made it possible for me to listen to a lot of books. And most people just don't, unfortunately, have time to sit down and read words on pages. I know, it's sad, but it's not so sad because Audible helps you get around that. You can put all the stuff in your ears. And in a lot of cases, like for instance, I got Steve Martin's book, Born Standing Up, because it's read by him. So Audible kind of gives you a whole nother layer of book consumption that you wouldn't necessarily have just with the voice in your head reading word for word. Then you get lost, and you got to go back and read the page over again. Then you start thinking about work, and then you got to go back and read the last chapter because you can't remember what you just read. All that goes away with Audible.com. So go to audiblepodcast.com/nerdist. Sign up and get a free audiobook. I will not be offended if it's not the Nerdist way, but thanks to Audible for being our sponsor this week on the Nerdist Podcast. And now, this episode of the Nerdist is number 148. Super nice guy, actor named Joel David Moore. Joel is the star of Avatar. He's been in a ton of television stuff, ton of guest stars, ton of series, a ton of commercials. You certainly recognize him when you see him and you hear him, and just an all-around terrific guy. So it was really fun to have him on while he's in production on Avatar 2. So here we go, Nerdist Podcast number 148, Joel David Moore. Hey, I perked up. Thanks, you guys. You made me feel all better. And crash.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
So what time did you get to bed then?
Oh,
God.
Late.
Yeah.
Well, because so we were at a party, and then my friend and I, it was either going back. You know, Zach. It was going back to Zach.
You went to Zach's place.
Well, it was either going to his or my. But we kind of drew straws. Where we were going to go. I ended up with a short straw. which basically just meant that his sister didn't want anybody there.
Oh, gotcha.
So we all went back to my place and we partied. I don't know, maybe five? Doesn't sound so bad now that I'm saying
really,
it out loud. But
it does
like,
to me because I can't stay up past like 1 or 2 in the morning. I went to Zach's early.
Oh,
but I left
to the Hodges.
That's
funny. You were there.
I was there, but I left at like 10 o'clock.
Yeah, good man.
10:15, and then went to another party till about midnight, went home.
Oh yeah, but I did start drinking at 4
a.m.
in the afternoon.
The previous day.
Okay, so yeah, no. So your sins are not forgiven.
sorry again. It's,
come on,
my
church time,
penance thing.
I'm late.
I didn't start drinking until later, but we went to, it's so funny going to, when you go to Hollywood parties, like I'm a guy from Portland, Oregon, like what the hell is going on here? Like I go to these things and I'm like, and you know, like my friends like Chris are out there and they're fun and famous and crazy and kooky. And then but you really realize like how crazy and kooky people are when they have to dress up and they have to like invent shit like on Halloween. So they have to do cool, like you have to be cooler than your neighbor kind of thing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like back when, you know, you're in Portland, you just had to be cooler than your neighbor, but they're not that cool. They're everybody's nerds and weirdos and hippies. And
keeping it weird.
Yeah. But
Portland, permanent summer camp.
But I showed up. One of my buddies had sponges all over his body, and I said, I made the mistake of asking what he was. Then he said, I'm self-absorbed. And I thought, that's Hollywood.
And that's also meta because he probably actually is.
That's Hollywood.
I always tried to do the way over the top, like I'm so clever costume, and they never worked out. I think my biggest fail one year was I got all this kind of like translucent tinsel and hung it from my body, and I tried to go as Hall's Mentholyptus vapor action, and in your head, it's not really, because you in your head you think like, oh, this no one's gonna, and the answer is like, yeah, no one. So every time you go up to someone, they're like, what are you? Are you some kind of space monster?
Yeah,
and you're
No,
I'm from the Hall's commercials with the I'm clearing out there. Ah, fuck it. And then you start pulling it off, angry. Yeah.
I was driving through West Hollywood last night, and I saw three people dressed like Lieutenant Dangle.
I saw a Dangle at Zach's party, and I thought it was Tom Lennon at first. That's how good it was.
So I texted, was it Zach Efron?
It was not Zach.
Oh, I saw Zach last night.
Zach Efron was a Dangle? Efron's a Dangle?
Zach Efron was wearing Tom Lennon's costume.
By the way, I'm going to give a shout out to Zach right now because I love him. And that was such a fucking great.
Because it was the real thing.
It was the real thing, by the way. He had the mustache. Yeah. Everything worked out. Yeah, there he is. Yeah.
Now that to me.
Love that Zac Efron.
Wait a minute.
For you who are listening, we are showing a picture of Zac Efron in the Lieutenant Dangle.
Now that sounds like like a military code thing. Like Efron's the Dangle. Move in.
Yeah. Well, sometimes Efron's the Dangle, and you just got to deal with it.
When I was walking in, Jonah was like, I was like, did you go out last night? He's like, yeah, you know, kind of. He's like, I was in West Hollywood, so I wasn't sure if it was Halloween or if it was just a normal day.
Well, on Halloween, I lived in West Hollywood for many years.
So I guess you guys switched.
Matt and Jonah. When you say Jonah, just remember.
No, actually,
charming one.
This year, Matt's going as Jonah, and Jonah's going as Matt.
Matt
so let's do it.
I'm so confused.
So in that case, I'm just staying in and complaining.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. You nailed it.
I lived in West Hollywood for many years, and that West Hollywood Halloween parade.
It's insane.
You can't, I mean, you either have to be in the perimeter to get home, or you just don't go home that night because it is impossible to get anywhere near that area.
But do they have a thing? Because Hollywood has a parade every, you know, 3 or 4 days. So is there a thing going on, or is it just like people?
No, it is a thing, and it's fucking, it is intense. It's packed. I mean, it's a blast. I mean, I guess if you're you know, if you're drunk or just happy on life or whatever, it's super, but it's so many people that you would feel like you're being crushed in a compactor of people. And it's dude, like one year a dude ran up and he was dressed as Superman and there was a hole cut out in his trunks and his dick was out and his dick was also dressed as Superman.
That's meta.
Yeah, it was very much so. Very much so.
His balls were also a little.
No, Luther.
Oh, yeah.
His balls were kryptonite. Yeah.
I saw my favorite costume of the night was a guy who was dressed as a homeless man with 1%. That's all he had on. 1%.
Oh, my God.
And I thought that was great. And the best costume of the night until another gentleman walked in with the exact same costume. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I got this wrong.
99%.
99%. Yeah. And his wife was all glitz and glammed up. And she was the 1%. Yeah. And then somebody else walked in as the 99%. And the story is bad because I fucked it up already.
No. It doesn't matter. You can end any story by just saying, and then I jerked off.
And then, exactly.
That makes any story. Yeah. We've talked about this before. It's the best way to end any story that you feel like doesn't end the way you want it to.
I also like to use the kind of the Simpsons joke. And then that's when the chuds came after me.
The chuds.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say this. I'm embarrassed.
It's from the episode where they go to New York. And then Homer doesn't want to go because of the bad experience he had in New York when he was there as a kid.
And that's
what were the Chuds though?
The Chuds, the cannibalistic human underdwellers.
The movie Chud. It was just in the eighties. Yeah. Was it eighties or late seventies?
Early '80s.
Early '80s horror movie. The Chuds. Furman and I tried to put Chuds in the pilot we did for IFC.
Oh really?
But it's just that scene got cut out.
It's just real schlocky horror movie from that.
Yeah, era. Now I remember Chuds. Mm. Now that you explain the acronym, I do remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. Did you have a costume? Did you get dressed?
I did. Up? I went. The lady friend was like a 40s cigarette girl,
mm-hmm.
And so she was supposed to have another costume, and she totally screwed me because she was supposed to be Sailor Moon,
mm-hmm.
who I had no idea who that was. But then I was going to go as, I don't know, Gentleman Jack. What the hell is that guy's name? Tuxedo Mask. Tuxedo Rose. The guy with the tuxedo and the rose. It's very inventive names, by the way. Literally, he has I think it's Tuxedo Mask, and it's because he has a tuxedo and he wears a mask.
Now, I know Sailor Moon. Sailor Moon very well.
Her counterpart in the show is this guy named Tuxedo Mask or something.
No.
So anyway,
so you didn't know who you were.
I had no clue, and it was stupid, and I hated it. I hated life because I was going to have to go as a stupid thing that I didn't know what I was. And so but then it didn't come in. Fortunately, thank be the gods. And she ended up going as like a little 40s smoke. You know, like they hand out cigarettes.
Yeah,
she got a little tray of cigarettes. And I thought that was great. But then I didn't have a costume because she screwed me over right at the end. And so I thought, okay, well, I called my friend who I was like, how do I figure out the counterpart to this? And so I call my buddy and I'm like, hey, Dave, you dress like you're an asshole from Newsies all the time. Can I just borrow a bunch of your clothes, you jerk?
Sure, I'm not offended at all, Joe. Whatever you need.
Yeah, exactly. And I literally went over and I just like Newsied myself out. And I'm a nerd, so I really went a little too far. So I laminated these prohibition signs.
Awesome.
Like, so I was like the guy like selling booze right after prohibition, you know. And so I had all these like little whiskeys on my side, and it was fun. It worked out. I was definitely the life of the party anywhere I went. He says, shaking his head.
I want to go one year. I want to actually spend some time. I was going to do 10th Doctor this year, but I just didn't have time to get the Tenant suit, so I ended up going as Drake from Uncharted.
Yeah,
but. But, oh, and then the previous night
wasn't your suit that you wore to that Doctor Who convention? I just assumed that you had that suit.
No, that was,
CBS got that?
CBS got that for me. I had to give it back. The previous night, I went to a party at Nerd King Will Wheaton's house with the Pollen Storm and a bunch of fun folks. And I had an anime fox costume. And I put on boxing gloves, and I had tried to explain to everyone that I was foxy boxing, but no one got it. And then I got hot, and so I just took it off. But one
so
year,
then you were just you.
Then I was just me. Yeah, I thought I would put little drapes on my hair and be '90s Chris Hardwick.
That'd
but
be,
then
that'd
I didn't.
Be fantastic.
Did you get that shirt that we put you in for that? And the long sleeves.
Somehow, like, you always had those sleeves.
Super long sleeves. Or a gas station shirt.
My so-called life sleeves.
Like, maybe even the thumb. Maybe the thumb.
Just the tip of the fingers.
Yeah.
And then I totally remember that. Like that.
And then I have my notebook with doodles all over it.
We could get you an extra chin, and you could be Peter Hardwick.
I could be. My fat, fake brother Peter. But 1 year, I want to... You made me think of this because of Sailor Moon. I want to go with a girl who's dressed up like a Sailor Moon, and then I'll get some sort of octopus costume and connect a tentacle under her skirt, and I want to go as hentai. I want to go as hentai. And then that's the Japanese tentacle porn.
Have we sufficiently dated this podcast so it's airing tomorrow?
What?
Have we sufficiently dated this podcast?
Yeah, fuck.
So
people know what Halloween is. They don't. Yeah. It's not like in 2 weeks they're going to go
dressing up. What is this Halloween?
I don't know. I've got my turkey costume on.
We are in Libya. We just had our freedom.
But Joel, it's nice to have you on because I certainly have been. I've certainly known your work for years. You've done fucking more commercials. You and JP Manu have done like more commercials than anyone in the world.
Like, well, yeah, back in the day, we hoard ourselves out. In fact, that's what JP. I don't even know if either of us do them anymore. But
JP lives in Canada.
He does?
The last time I saw
you can't do commercials in Canada.
Last time I saw JP, he was in Montreal, and he was like, "Yeah, I just moved here." I mean, Manu, he does have a French Canadian name.
But yeah, he's like he does a lot of Disney cartoons, so he can just
such a sweet guy. Yeah. Such a sweet guy.
Yeah, no, he's great. Commercials were. Oh my god. There was like a time. There was a 2 year period where I hoarded myself out so much in commercials that it was embarrassing. I kind of looked at it like a business, and I was like, how do I figure out how does a tall goofy guy get into this business? Well, commercials. That's the way to go.
Every young actor loves. I mean, like the commercial route. Because one good commercial can save you a year of having to get a job that you don't want.
Right. I worked at Circuit City back then, man. I literally, back when Circuit City was around.
You killed Circuit City.
I killed Circuit City. I did a Best Buy commercial while I was working at Circuit City.
That's great.
So funny.
That's awesome.
How was Circuit City?
Circuit City.
Service is state of the art. Okay.
It always felt like a step above. It felt like a futuristic flea market.
Yeah, yeah, no, no, yeah. no. It was like it's between Best Buy and Radio Shack,
right? Kind
of, yeah. Right? So like Circuit City. I it's funny. I actually worked at Circuit City while I was in Portland going to college, or actually Oregon, going to college at Southern Oregon University. I would go back in Christmas time, work there, and I was gonna come to Los Angeles as we do, for fame and fortune. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, how do I have to like make a living. And so I asked my people from Portland, I was like, so do you guys have Circuit Cities down there? And they're like, yes, young 21-year-old, Circuit City is nationwide. We will never die. We are the biggest company in the world.
Too big to fail.
Yes,
too big to fail. We're going to put Circuit City on the flag.
Yeah. And so, 1%. And so they just transferred me down to the Circuit City in Los Feliz, and I got an apartment around the corner. I knew like one person when I moved here, slept on his couch for like 2 weeks, and started working at Circuit City until I booked some commercials and then said, fuck you.
That's great.
But Circuit City was such a great job because I could kind of make my own hours so that you can, like be available to do commercials or, whatever you had to do. And I literally knew nothing about electronics at the time. I know a ton about electronics now, but at the point I knew nothing. And so I just realized, it's a lot like acting. You just bullshit your way through anything.
Yeah.
And I just, would be like, hey, how's it going? And I worked at, like, I was the only white guy working at Circuit City. It was, literally the only white guy. So, I'd be like, what are you looking for? And they'd be like, I really like the Sony television, 42-inch. I'm like, oh, that's such a great, but this Panasonic over here. Yeah, no, the Panasonic is, you'd yes-anding the entire thing.
It's almost like psychics, like fake psychics, where they just sort of they
fake
pick
psychics.
Up, well, come on,
psychics.
Miss Cleo.
Oh, never mind. Correct. You're correct.
But I mean, because there must be some psychics who actually believe, like, yes, I have the gift, and then there are some psychics who know, like, yeah, I don't, but fuck it, you know, I'm gonna con these people. I feel like that there must be some people, there must be some out there that feel like they have the thing.
I'm sure they, yeah, they do.
Like charismatic preachers.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah, there's a few of them. They're like, no, this is real, guys.
Yeah, no, I feel, yeah, it's real.
This is real.
Like Oda Mae Brown in that documentary Ghost. got mad. She didn't think she was, and then you know, see what happens when you pretend too long.
Right.
But I feel like there's a certain element of that where you start to figure out how to read people, and you kind of see where they're going, and you can manipulate them enough to you know.
Full on, Voltron style.
Voltron. Because I would go to those places and I would be like, these guys have no idea. I just asked him one thing and then he just contradicted that thing.
And it is a team because I knew nothing. I would have to like have my buddy working. We'd all split commissions because they loved me working there because I didn't know how to put things into a computer. I was a great salesman, but they would end up like taking half of the commission because they put it into the computer.
Ooh, gotcha.
So it'd be like a whole team of people working on it, and we literally would turn into a giant Japanese robot. Afterwards.
Did you have a pager on one belt and then on the side of your belt and then the keys?
By the way, we'd get all the new cell phones. You know, the ones that flip down.
The StarTac.
Yeah, like the great and they were gold back then. There was this like the cheapest. By the way. Cell phones are the weirdest, like, that's the weirdest transition in the last 8 years ever. There's no version of technology that has changed more than a cell phone.
Right.
I mean, I guess you could say pagers going into the two-way and all that, but I'm just saying, like, look at this. What is this spaceship that we have in our pockets?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is the craziest thing ever. Yeah. I mean, I was around when the cell phone came around. Like, texting? What was texting?
Yeah. It was an inconvenience.
8 years ago. Texting, I was like, no, I hate this. I have to push a button three times. Yeah.
Those old Motorola phones from, like, the late 90s, those, like, super slick ones, but still, you know, like it was the screens were monochromatic and it was, you still had to poke in the numbers.
Yeah, remember getting a color screen for the first time?
And then really in 2007, it just complete, because I had before I got the iPhone in 2007, I had a Palm Trio. I had the Trio 750, which was basically like, it looked like a hefty businessman's phone.
I had one. Yeah,
it was like a fucking brick.
No, it was ridiculous, but it was the coolest thing.
It was so cool.
It was like $7,000.
Yeah. I had a Razor and I loved it because you could have like, you know, 100 songs on it.
You didn't get the
what
Crazer?
What I liked about the Razor.
Was that the, maybe I did.
That
I
came after the Razor, the Crazer.
It might have been the Razor.
In 2007, my Razor gave me turn-by-turn directions. iPhone
did
still
it really?
Does not.
I know. Well, no, you can get the little app.
I gotta buy an app. I don't need an app.
But I know, it's so ridiculous.
And I can send picture messages. Remember when the iPhone couldn't do that, everybody?
Yeah.
And by the way, yeah, exactly. And what about copy and paste? I love the fact that I love the fact that Apple made a phone that didn't have the thing that they invented, which is copy and paste.
But Apple's never been with the exception of like that sort of graphical user interface based platform, which
they stole from Xerox,
or they, at least they got permission from Xerox, yeah, because Xerox didn't, you know, they were like,
what
sure,
are we going to do with it?
What's anyone going to do with this? With the exception of that, Apple's MO has sort of been, let's see where the market's going, see what other people are doing, and then go in and try to perfect it.
Right. Because
they didn't, you know, they didn't invent the MP3 player. They didn't invent the phone. They didn't invent the Apple TV unit.
True,
they didn't.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They kind of see what people are into, and then they figure out how to streamline and simplify it. And that's what they're supposedly going to do in 2013 with the Apple television.
12.
Wait, what?
Next year.
They'll announce it in 12
television?
And it'll be available to
not
consumers
Apple
in 2013.
TV. This is not Apple
an
TV.
Actual TV.
An actual television. Yeah, Steve Jobs had always been frustrated with how clunky televisions were and remotes. And so imagine, if you will, that in 2013, you sit down with your Apple television set, which I assume will have some version of OS on it. And rather than have to futz around with remotes, you'll just go, "Hey Siri, let's record this at this time, and then go to catch that Battlestar rerun, and then let's watch the Colbert Report right now."
Okay.
And it's just all voice activated.
And Siri's like, "I'm tired of Colbert."
Yeah, it's going to look serious? Good. It's going to be a good looking TV.
It's going to look great, and then it's going to take like 4 or 5 years to actually get to what we're talking about right now.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be too old to appreciate it.
Won't stop us from getting the first generation.
No, we'll get it. It won't have copy and paste, but we'll get it.
But I want to go back a little bit to the commercial thing, because commercials really are the gift for actors that keep on giving, and a very I mean, there was a very definite point when I said I will no longer go on commercial auditions because they're very hard. It just from the standpoint of that they're, I mean, it's not like railroad building hard.
Like but how
it,
many but, you have to do.
But it's emotionally like running all over town on every side of town, yeah, like yeah. four times a day. Yeah. And there are these crazy cattle calls and you see 500 other people that are your type and you hear the auditions through the door and then it's, and then you never do. And I never really booked any commercials.
It's humiliating.
I was terrible at it. I was terrible at it. So I always respected people who had that process down.
Yeah.
So what did it feel like for you?
That's sort of what it was. You know, it's funny. I stopped doing commercials once I did my first movie because for some reason I was like, okay, I feel like people won't take you seriously if, you know, to be a lead in film if you're, you know, hawking like Dove soap or whatever, right? You know? Yeah. Like so, and it's actually true. I mean,
Dove,
you
know, soap, guys, it's great for jerking off. Yeah, and you try to improv in the commercial auditions.
It's just weird. And then, but like, you know, it worked out because, you know, I think that there is some version of that idea in their brains. They kind of want something that first of all, all producers want to, you know, that they want to bring you to whatever they're doing. Like, this is the new thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're my candy. I brought you. I made this happen. So I stopped doing them like 2 years in. And I remember my mom going, wait, but honey, you've never made this kind of money.
Yeah. I mean, a good, if I remember correctly, a good class A national commercial, which is where the sponsor sponsors like a primetime television program.
Yeah.
You know, you do one commercial and you probably get paid scale to shoot it, but the residuals could be worth $100,000.
That was before my time.
Oh, they stopped doing that?
Well, no, I mean, you still could make residuals and everything. And I mean, you could get, like, you can get, you know, 20 or 30 from a commercial. But the thing about it is, if you go back 20 years, you'd probably make 100 grand, but there weren't. There were now. There's 10 times more commercials.
Right,
so like,
right.
You know, there's so many commercials to actually go and do. So you're actually, you know, you could have probably made more money when I was doing.
And it's spaced out nicely because, you know, you get paid on a schedule. So, you know, like the commercial airs for a couple months, and then you get a big check in the mail.
Yeah.
And it airs for a couple more months, and then you get another big check in the mail. And if they renew it, then you get another big check in the mail.
It sounds amazing.
It really does. Well, that's why the, you know. You know, particularly for commercial actors, you know, the unions and residuals are so important because that's the money that they rely on to live.
I remember the first commercial that I ever did was a commercial called it was for LA Times, and I was maybe 22 years old, and I do it and I make like, I don't know, $400 for the commercial, right?
Ka-ching.
And it was a local commercial, right? By the way, $400 back then was like you're sitting on loads of money. That's like 3 weeks of Circuit City work. and so I do the commercial and I'm and they're like, you know, this is just a local commercial. You're not going to really make any residuals from it. Well, I get this call from my agent. This must have not been a big deal to my agent, but it was a giant deal to me. And he's like, Joel, so you should come in. You have a shit ton of money waiting for you here. And they had sold it. Whoever owned LA Times owned Chicago Tribune and New York Post, like all of these other things. And so they liked the commercial and they sold it to all these different places. And I had like $8,000.
Holy shit.
Like, some like ridiculous number to a 22-year-old kid who was working.
How did you blow it?
The first call I did make was to my mother, and I said, you know, I'm walking into my agency and they're gonna give me $8,000 worth of checks. This is amazing. And she's like, oh my god, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna buy a car with that? now cut to like now. Where you're thinking, that doesn't cover very much.
Yeah,
that's
a down payment.
Well, first of all, yeah, that you can't buy a car for that. And that doesn't even cover like that much of, has it really, Has inflation hit us that much?
I gotta tell you though,
your standard of living's gone up.
It's standard of living. Yeah, so I'm the asshole. Yeah.
I make a comfortable living with all the nerd stuff that I'm. But if someone called and said we have an $8,000 check for you, I'd be like, I'll fucking be right over. Like,
yeah.
I'd be so
excited.
Yeah,
but no. But this was like it was the biggest thing that had ever happened to me. That wouldn't be the big, like, right now. If you got an $8,000 check, you'd be like, okay, that's cool. Hey,
when
residuals.
I was,
like, you get residuals from shit that you do. I'm sure. Like,
yeah. Sometimes. But
what's that last Terminator 3 residual? What was that?
Oh, I get some hilarious ones. Like, I did two episodes of Married with Children in 96, and they still air, and I'll get like a 2-cent check.
Nice. Yeah.
And there used to be, there was a bar in Studio City called Residuals,
yeah.
And you could go in, and if your residual check was under a dollar, you'd give it to them, and then you'd get a drink, and they'd put it up on the wall. So their walls were just covered with these. Like, the postage is more expensive
than
sending
check,
you a 2-cent a check. But when I was in high school, I did one commercial, and I ended up getting like $10,000 total for it, and I blew the shit out of that. This will date this story. I went out and bought the NES.
Nice.
Every game I could find, every controller I could find, like everything. I went through that money so fucking fast. That's
awesome. I got a $1 check once for a residual, and like I thought it was so funny. I didn't fucking bother cashing it.
I would have.
I loved it. I loved having it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that. But then it messes it up because then they have to like send you something at the end of the year saying like you still have you know
2 cents.
Yeah, exactly.
Need to get 50 cents on this dollar.
So dumb.
So you grew up in Portland.
Portland, Oregon. Born and raised. I went to school there.
We were just there.
High school there. Really?
Yeah
we just
all three of you?
Yeah, we performed at the Aladdin.
Oh. No way. Are you serious?
Fucking great.
It was a blast.
That's my old stomping ground.
Great place. Great city.
Went to ground control beforehand.
Wait, where's that? Maybe. Here's the thing.
Did
I didn't party. I left when I was 19, and I went to Ashland, Oregon, and did 2 years at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and Southern Oregon University, and I graduated college. Did the festival, came right here. So I took my first. I had my first whiskey in Ashland, Oregon, when I turned 21. I was a little bit of a conservative kid, so I didn't do a lot of drinking. I think that like I Zima'd it up.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Like, yeah.
At parties.
Happy water. It's just like happy water.
It's happy water. Yeah. So did you guys do any partying when it?
I went to Powell's. I went to Powell's and was like, hey,
okay,
do you
Powell's
have this book,
badass,
this
yeah.
book, and this book? And they're like, that's in our annex for scientific books. It's in the other building.
Nice white guy voice. It's a good white guy voice.
Well, thank you.
Sorry, sir. You're gonna have to move your car.
I apologize. You want those?
Powell's is scary.
Powell's is
amazing.
Awesome.
I'm going back there.
For people who don't know, Powell's is one of the biggest bookstores in America. It's a very famous bookstore as well. In fact, my grandparents were very close friends with the Powell's, who started the store. The store is basically a mall.
Huge.
It's a mall of books.
Yep.
It's like, you know, it's an entire city block in Portland, Oregon of just books, and there's levels and levels. And by the way, you have a Kindle sitting here,
yeah.
You know, the iPad. The only thing that I'm thinking is like, how long can Powell's stay around?
I know it's going to be a real.
As long as they continue to sell used books, they'll be around for quite a while.
I guess that's true. I always like knowing that Powell's is still around. I feel a little better
about life
because I go, okay, at least there's at least. But when that falls, when that Citadel falls, it's gonna be like, oh shit, guys, here we go.
If Powell's goes out of business, do you guys just want to make a pact to end it?
Yeah.
We'll do a suicide pact
in here.
We'll do a suicide pact.
We'll talk our way through it. I don't know how cyanide works, so we'll
quickly.
Just talk our
quickly.
Way to like to oblivion.
Yeah, we get. See, you made me think of a movie that I think you were in.
Hoosiers.
Were you in Foxfire?
I was in. How the hell did you know? That's crazy. That by the way, I was 15 years old. I was. I had one line. It got cut out. And
did you meet Angelina Jolie?
I didn't, because Angelina Jolie. By the way, she wasn't Angelina Jolie. Who? Nobody gave a shit about who she was. I was like in love with the little cheerleader girl. Which, whoever you are, if you're out there, I've tried to look you up on IMDb, and I couldn't find out who. No, I can't figure out which one it was. But I remember, I'm going to totally out you, little cheerleader girl, because I was 15. She was probably, I don't know, 17 or 18. My buddy Dash Mihawk was in it as well, and Dash and I know each other now.
Is that a comic book character?
Isn't it funny?
That is an amazing name.
Dash Mihawk.
He was in it, but this gal was
like my, she had probably done nothing at that point, and maybe she's a giant star and I don't know it now, but at the point she had done nothing, but I looked up to her so much because she had her own trailer. And so we hung out in her trailer and I was like trying to like Mac on her. That's what she did back in the day. Yeah. Mac, yeah, remember Mac. Macking?
So my Mac, Mac and scamming. Scamming was the other thing they
scamming?
Called it.
Scamming. Oh, yeah,
yeah. Scamming.
Scamming? That just sounds weird.
Yeah, that's when a girl would take the scrunchie off her arm, put her hair up, and then you'd scam.
See, macking in on the West Coast or in Portland was not, you wouldn't hook up. That's not a hookup. Macking is just like you're putting your game.
It's making out.
No, like, okay, no. So you're macking to you is making out. Macking to us was like putting our game on.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. Scamming. There might be some light fingering involved with scamming.
Yeah, no, nice. If you take it from Say Anything is when you go on a date with a girl, but you know she doesn't know it's a date, so that's a scam.
Oh.
Yeah, she thinks you're just hanging out, you think it's a date.
A scam is when you tell a billionaire you're going to invest his money. Yeah, and then you're...
Exactly.
Okay, so here we go.
Daddy Mac will make it. That's the crisscross.
Daddy Mac will make you.
Yeah.
Petty Burress. Angelina Jolie, Jenny Lewis.
Wait a minute, what does she look like?
Jenny Lewis, red hair.
I bet it was Jenny Lewis.
And Rilo Kiley?
Yeah, Jenny Lewis, who was also in Camp Beverly Hills.
She was Troop Beverly Hills.
Troop Beverly Hills.
Is there a picture of her?
Yeah.
I would know her by picture. She was in the only thing.
Here, scroll through there and see if you recognize
her. I saw a Kathy Moriarty in there.
She was also in The Wizard with Fred Savage, which is the Nintendo movie.
Right?
Oh.
And also, she had three.
It was Peter Facinelli.
There it is.
Was the cheerleader. Yeah, Jenny Lewis was also in the Postal Service with...
she just had the two tracks on it, right?
Just the two?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't really a real band.
No, it was just a collaboration.
It's a real band to me.
See, it could have been... Okay, wait. So what does Jenny Lewis say? Oh, Cindy. See, there's no... I would need to... I would... you know who... Okay, can we just get Jenny, Hetty... Sarah and Michelle in a room, put
guys,
them all in
listen,
cheerleader
we're not
outfits?
The first person today, I'm sure... Millions of young people are around the country saying, when is the Foxfire reunion happening?
Yeah, exactly.
Jolie is the one hanger on.
I don't know. I don't know which one is.
No, she's the one who's down. No one else will do it.
That's all the kids she's adopted. She's just trying to recreate Foxfire. The story about these rebellious teenage girls who meet a mysterious stranger.
There should be a sequel, and it's a movie reunion, you know. Like, it's a sequel to the movie. They're all older now. And then we'll have Rilo Kiley do the soundtrack.
Now, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
It could be this Hetty girl, Hetty Burress.
Hedley.
I don't know. The problem is that it's been, 14, 15 years since I saw her. So she was, she was a young girl back then.
Oh, we could do a movie called Fire Fox, which is just about a flaming fox who hugs the planet.
And occasionally crashes due to plug-in problems.
That's right. Or any add-ons you've created.
It could be about that sticker. By the way, a douchebag, right? If they are driving a white truck and they have that fox sticker with the fox
my God.
Face in Guys. The middle. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
That's like if you want to be outed as a douchebag, put that sticker on
that. That or the Calvin peeing.
Yeah,
on something.
Are you talking about the fox racing?
I don't know. It's just an F-O-X, but the O is the fox face.
Yeah, it's fox racing. Yeah.
Is that an NASCAR thing?
No, it's a
man against man racing? Jesse Owens?
Off-road and motorcycle, dirt bike kind of stuff.
If you have one
Meatballs,
of these, call in now and tell us
cross
why
country.
The fuck you put it
No, Joel, this isn't live.
Car.
There's no one's going to call
in.
And
then tell us where you got your truck nuts.
Where did you get truck nuts and your Yosemite Sam mud flaps?
Oh, those are classy.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having Yosemite
or
Sam mud flaps.
The Tasmanian devil on something or reflective naked lady
And
silhouette.
Then if you could tell me what the obsession with the Puerto Rican girls that grew up around Lowell, what their obsession with Tweety Bird was, if you could answer that for me.
That was Tweety Bird was everywhere.
Was it?
Yeah, it was all just kind of like tough, girls.
Why?
Turned to Tweety. Because...
It's right. You can't answer either.
A cute thing. That,
I like how specific you thought it was, though.
When I was 12, that was where I was.
Between.
Well, if we really were to delve into the philosophy of Tweety Bird, Tweety was a character that was perceived as weak.
Okay.
But always outsmarted the much stronger cat.
Just like women.
That's right.
Right? Guys,
who,
guys
the cat, by the way,
fellas.
Who was black. I mean, I'm just saying. I'm not, draw your own conclusions.
And
there.
Was Tweety's speech impediment? A metaphor for their accent?
I think yes.
Okay. We're learning a lot.
I like it. Yeah. So I feel like there's no fads anymore. I don't know what we're doing.
There have to be.
Are
we're just
fads?
Missing them. We're
How,
just missing
I'm 34.
Them.
How old are you?
39.
39. So we were in high school roughly the same time. No, we were not really.
But barely. Basically. Like when I was leaving, you were coming in.
But in that generation there were crazy fads, man. Like
there's
people
still fads.
doing
But people would suck on pacifiers, pacifiers. Yeah. And stuff. Like
that was the rave scene starting to come up.
That's what people doing ecstasy, I think.
No, that was a ghetto thing.
And like, snap
I went to a high school where I was the minority, and I feel like I learned a lot of cool fads back then, but I was too afraid to do any of them.
Yeah.
You know, because I didn't want to get beat up or whatever.
Right.
But the tag on the hat, like keeping the hat. Tag.
Yeah,
but
that came back though as like the 50-50 stickers.
It did come back. And people the people leave the stickers still on there.
51-50
black or white now. It doesn't
bend the rim.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, and they don't bend the rim. But like, oh, what else? The combs in the hair, black or white. Mm. That works.
Crisscross crisscross that you referenced earlier.
Chain wallets
did try to start the putting on your clothes backwards.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, which I felt,
I missed the bus on that.
Well played.
It was the bomb.
Well played. Remember, and then in 2015, all the kids pulled their pockets out of their pants.
Yeah, exactly. That's everyone wore it.
Starter jackets. And then the one leg up.
That was LL Cool J.
LL Cool J.
That brought that to the mainstream.
Cool J, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Cookies in a plastic bag getting crushed by a building.
I mean, listen, you know, you're looking at your pants and you're like, what could I do differently? You know, you have the pants. What can I do?
It was a West Coast, East Coast, West Coast thing.
Was it?
Yeah, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the problem with being a guy is that like we've had the same clothes for 50 years, 40 years now. We're jeans and a I mean, look at us. We're twins. We both have gray t-shirts
and jeans. Like, yeah. It's like, and I think, you know, there must be some sort of a class that just delves into the symbolism of these types of social trends over the past, you know, like watching that those sort of social those memes.
What I've seen lately, though, with kids, just you know, driving by schools. That sounds gross.
Weird.
Well, that's what he does. Like, it's what he does. Like,
you know, it's better. Wait, hang on. I'm going to say that's better than saying, you know what I know, just from hanging around schools.
Hanging around schools.
Driving by makes it okay.
They have very, very huge, big, like tons of stuff on their keychains. They have like keychains that hang off the side, and they just have like, you know, squirrel's tail and fucking little Pokemon things, just a bunch of keychains that pile up on the side. I've noticed that as a trend.
It can't be any different than
so being a janitor is a trend now.
Yeah, but like a janitor that's really into anime.
I think it's tribalism. Like, I don't think it's any different than, you know, than early tribes. You know, like if you had a, you know, if you had a spear that had a certain number of tails from kills, or if you like face paint or any kind of. It's just it's a kind of significant ornamentation thing that forms a tribal community, I think, is what it is.
It's weird, like the indie rock style hipster girls have really embraced American Indian styles. Like, you know, if you notice that they have there's like the raccoon tails, or there's like the headdress stuff, the little feathers in the hair.
Yep,
there's been a lot of that.
I just like the idea that, you know, for the last 30 years the tattoos have been going crazy, and the Asian tattoos are like nuts, right? So like you're gonna have we're gonna at some point have a bunch of 95-year-old men and women out there with like tramp stamps.
Oh my god, and gramp
Asian
stamps.
Gramp stamps and Asian tattoos, and they're gonna have to explain what the shit all this stuff means. By the way, they're not gonna remember.
They're gonna have to lift skin because they're gonna look like old boxing equipment.
Yeah, so they have to kind of stretch it out. It's like this means integrity.
Just like the old glove. Did you see that? Was it you that posted the tattoo of Bobcat Goldthwait's?
No, I don't think so.
I think this was Bobcat Goldthwait's, but it was basically. It was a crash symbol on a stand with like a Fu Manchu mustache on it, and it was a Chinese symbol.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
I feel like that was Bobcats, but I'm not 100%.
Kyle Kinane has a great tattoo and this like fancy kind of script on his arm right here, and it just says no regrets.
Furman for the longest time was trying to get the Chinese symbol for shoulder, which he was going to put on his shoulder.
Nice.
But then he never. Do you have any tattoos, Joel?
I don't.
Me
I've
neither.
Never. I've never.
I'm ink free.
Because I really want to be buried in a Jewish cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not Jewish, but I just want to be married and buried in one. I also want to be married in one.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
No.
Married.
I just never caught on.
Me neither.
I'm not cool enough.
I'm on the fence and probably going to get one soon.
Is it going to be NASA related?
Yeah. Probably.
Wait, is this a tattoo-less room right now?
This is a tattoo-less room.
Oh,
he's got a
tattoo.
He has one tattoo.
What is it?
You can see it. It's a jackass penguin.
It's a South African jackass penguin.
Wait, what does that mean, a jackass penguin?
It's just the type of penguin it is.
It's really called a jackass penguin?
Yeah. They're just South African penguins now. They've now just called them
PC, man. They're PC.
Really?
Yeah.
They're South African because they're penguins who believe in apartheid. And
I'm sorry, that's going off your joke about what if penguins became racist.
So wait, what we were talking about Foxfire, I can't remember. I didn't answer your question.
I was saying that that Foxfire was like this group of people that we were going to form I don't remember either. Anyway, but I do want to talk about, did you ever do stand-up or did you sketch or anything?
I never did. I mean, I took a class, you know, a couple classes with, I think, what's the one from Chicago originally?
Second City.
And I just never, at that point I was kind of more steadily working. So I kind of had found my route once I did Dodgeball.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of opened. I hadn't done anything before that, right? So I kind of went from commercials to we had no idea. I could not get arrested, literally, in this town. Like, I couldn't get a co-star.
It's really easy. You just shoot someone in public.
Really?
And they'll arrest you. Yeah.
But no, apparently, if you're a celebrity, you can't.
Yeah, you get off.
You'd get arrested.
But then you'd be acquitted.
I actually live around the corner from where the whole Robert Blake thing, and that's what I think the entire, like, that is the epitome of stardom right now. It's like, you can, like, by the way, now all you have to be is American, and you just get away with shit. Amanda Knox, like, you can do whatever you want in life at this point. And as long as you're American, and by the way, if I'm going to kill somebody, I'm going to go to another country to do it.
Because that doesn't work out for reality show producers.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. See, I don't even. God damn it!
If I was not famous and I needed to kill someone, I would take a flight with them and kill them in another country and have it go on, because then America's gonna get your back, man. Yeah. They're like, you can't mess with, you know, our Americans overseas. I mean, how does a man? Maybe she didn't do it. I have no idea. I didn't even follow the.
I don't
the
know
trial.
Anything about the case. So
maybe
I can't
she.
Comment.
Maybe it's like all, you know, bullshit, and she shouldn't have been there in the first place, but on trial in the first place, but. I'm just noticing that, as long as, even in America, as long as you just get on Fox News, you're going to get off.
Yeah.
If you can just make it to Nancy Grace, you will get off.
I don't know enough about the Amanda Knox case either. I would see it pop up on the Google News feed, and then I would go, I got to work. This looks like a job trying to delve into all the details of this case. Yeah. Super
well, this looks depressing.
She looks hot.
Down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But in the Italian, they're like, oh, she's a very pretty.
Ugly girls do not get off as well.
Yeah, she's a pretty girl. No, I don't know. I don't know any of the details of the case. I don't know if all the evidence was circumstantial or if the evidence was like, nah, it was like a Casey Anthony thing. Like, she really should have been
blissfully ignorant.
But no, I actually think it was different. I think that one really was, you know, a guy kind of going after her and trying to blame her for something, and Italian justice system's a little bit weird, and so you know
the criminal justice system, the law has two distinctive the people who arrest and the prosecutor.
Why are you dancing?
Law
Why
and
are you
order
dancing?
Milano.
It's a beautiful culture.
They don't actually do their own language, they just do a bad accent. Yeah. Hey, Mr. Hey, Signore McCoy.
Bippity bop.
You would like a pizza on the trial? I make these jokes because my mother's Italian, so I can.
Which
so
it's allowed?
Deride
which would
Italian.
Make you Italian.
It makes
half
me
Italian.
It makes me half. Yeah.
And half what?
Anglo mutt. My dad's.
I really thought you were gonna say angry.
Angry. My dad's. You know, the Hardwick side of the family is Scottish Northern English, and then it should be Facente. The Facenti side of the family. They Americanized it when my great grandparents came over to Ellis Island, but the Facentis, very
that's
Italian.
Good. It's not as good as Facinelli.
The Facinelli's, but Ellie, because that's got such a nice roll to it. Facinelli.
Yeah. Anything with Ellie, you're right.
Ellie, yeah, it's great. Which means little. Like that's how you diminutize something, is put the etta or ele. Like that's how you make something little. So
little so like fatches.
Yeah. And they do it in all languages. Like burrito is a little burro. You know, like a little donkey.
Delicious.
So delicious, which you should enjoy. But that's not the end of the show yet.
No.
Even though we say that at the end of the show. But then, so you worked on Dodgeball, and then Avatar. I mean, you're in the biggest movie ever.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think that we were all confused going in, but we kind of, you know, the nice thing about doing a movie where you have no clue what you're doing the entire time, because it's all in one guy's head, and he, you know, the guy who's helming it up, it just is basically taking, you know, this entire world and creating this whole thing for 2.5 years. You're shooting one movie, which is the craziest experience ever. I mean, most shows don't even last that long. But you kind of always sit back and go, okay, this guy's got a pretty good track record.
Yeah.
So whatever we're doing here, hopefully will work. Now, we did not think that it was going to break his previous record.
How could you think that? I mean, that's like who? I mean, that guy, James Cameron, is, I have so much respect for that guy because he knew that the technology would catch up to this movie that he wanted to make. And it was sort of like, we're all in or we're not doing it. And he set that film up so high to fail. I mean, like, not, he didn't make a bad movie. I just meant that the amount of money that it costs and the hype that preceded it was just like, nothing really ever lives up to that.
Yeah.
And then it did. And it was a fucking, like, a crazy grand slam home run.
I feel like these days you can't beat hype. You can never beat hype. So, like, I went and saw Drive.
Yeah.
And I didn't enjoy it because the hype was so, like, you can't, it's almost bad for a movie in ways.
Yeah, I felt bad for people that saw it after all the hype went out.
Yeah, I didn't see it that original weekend, and I felt like if I had seen it the original weekend, I wouldn't have heard anything. The
same thing for me in Dunstan Checks In. I had heard everything leading up to that movie, well, and then when I actually saw it, then it was like, just didn't live up to the hype. But Avatar was, so I got such a spiritual boner for James Cameron of like, this guy had a vision, he saw it in detail years before, and he fucking made it happen, and it worked.
It's the perfect nerd story for your fans here. But you know what's fun about it is that in the over two years that we were shooting, I kind of watched the graphics turn. So you're doing motion capture. This is so hard to explain, but when you're doing motion capture, he had an actual virtual camera that if he pointed it toward you and you were in your motion capture little dots, you know, you could see my character.
Yep.
You could see my avatar.
Yeah, I've seen that at ILM, yeah.
So those graphics, those are just placed graphics, right? So they're obviously, you know, it's not what you would see on the screen at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so that he can understand and see the world, and it's really sort of, you know, gives him the ability to kind of look at what's going on as opposed to just having a bunch of people in a room and then having to do it all later. He wants, he wants to know where the tree is going to be, what we're grabbing onto. Like, we're interacting with all of these things. Mind you, it's just a big, giant, open, gray stage. But the graphics were the craziest part about it. It was like walking through 20 years of computer games, you know, or starting from computer games going to video games. Like, we were in like Commodore 64 graphics, and then we got to like Nintendo graphics, and then Sega Genesis graphics, and then, you know, GameCube graphics, and then like literally all the way up to, you know, to like the first Xbox graphics that were different than this new HD Xbox, you know, graphics. It ultimately was the way to, like, the history of what we were doing was kind of in the progression of these, of how good the graphics got. And the better, because, by the way, a lot of this was being created as we were going.
Right.
This is how brilliant this man is. He didn't have everything together right from the beginning. He had it all together, but it was, you know, like the cameras that we were using for the live action side. These are stuff that he and Pace had built and had created for this, you know, for this movie, and the guts were coming out of them and everything. And then, you know, a month later, there was like a shell that was on it. You
that's
know, like,
awesome.
Wow.
This was all just kind of being. It was very free flowing. It honestly, it's the most artistic version of technology I've ever seen, because it was very free flowing. Everything was just kind of like putting it together, like you would even with the pointing this virtual camera thing, like the idea of that was very artistic. If you're going to do this big technical nightmare of a thing, he's still able to gain quality with whatever he's doing. You know, he's still making sure every beat is the way that he's interpreting, you know, this story.
Yeah. And it's also a testament to just having a vision where you go, well, I'm not gonna kill this idea before we even try it by saying that there isn't the technology available. I know what I want to do. Let's just do it, and we will figure it out. And then once you put yourself in that kind of like stream of action. I think you just like you said, you know, he figured it out. It's like, well, we'll build the technology. I mean, to have that much vision, to have the artistic vision first and then go, we'll just build the technology as we go along and then figure that out.
Yeah.
That, because that's a whole other level of, you know, it's not just like walking into a movie and going, oh, we got all the cameras, we'll just point these here and there. It's like, we have to invent the fucking cameras to shoot this thing that like, I'm making up in my head.
We have never heard of celluloid at that point. Like, this is all brand new.
So it was all, it was mostly, I mean, with the exception of like the lab interiors, I mean, I assume it was pretty, it was just all just motion capture.
Well, no,
so
it was about, Sigourney Weaver. She was all motion capture. She actually
so
was
much.
Never on set. She was just
so
motion
much.
Yeah. No. And by the way, one of the greatest people that I've met in this town. I feel like there's certain people that can be divas. Like if I meet somebody, I'm like, yes, you have the right and responsibility to be a diva. You have earned it in mm-hmm. life. And she's one of those people, and she just happens to be like the most down to earth, like chill.
The most
cool.
I think the most talented, coolest. I think the most talented. Successful people don't have anything to prove. So, like your Tom Hanks is not someone I've ever met, but I just get the, you know, I assume he seems like, oh, he's a great guy, and Bryan Cranston's a great guy, and Sigourney Weaver's like these people who are just, you know, there's no pretense. They don't have anything to prove. They're just just do their work and they're sweet.
It's the middle people.
It's the middle people.
It's us.
Yeah, it's us. It's us because we're in this weird.
We have a shit ton to prove. No, and if you don't have, and if you're working at Circuit City, like there's nothing to prove because you're just normal and you're just doing your thing. Like you're trying to get into the business. It's the people who are in the business all the way up until the people who are making $10 million a movie. Right, just right under that.
Yeah.
If you're making good money per movie or good money on TV, you're still like, if you're on TV, you want to do movies. If you're in movies, well, those TV guys are making more money. You know, like you're always trying to prove until you're Tom Hanks and you're like, I don't care. I could retire. I could not do anything. Yeah. I have a family.
But
I had the pleasure of working with Rita Wilson, who, you know, I mean, Tom Hanks is like, I'm sure for you too, like growing up, that's that's the idea that you have, you know, because he's not Brad Pitt, mm-hmm. you know, not, and I happen to be a Brad Pitt fan. I have nothing against him, but you know, Tom's against the grain. He worked against the grain and he's the biggest, you know, one of the biggest movie stars out there, but he's a traditional, you mm-hmm. know, and for guys like me and Chris, you know, that's kind of, you look up to that.
The sort of goofy white guy.
Yeah, the goofy white
makes
guy.
Makes it.
Exactly.
How many times have you heard this when you're going up for a role? Joel, they're just looking for more leading man.
Oh, yeah.
I used to get that all the time.
But by the way.
And then I stopped auditioning.
I just said, okay, I'm just going to play the friend role all the time.
I got
this
so many
perfect.
Of the friend roles.
Because you know what? I'm going to work more than the leading men.
That's
because
the
there's
thing.
More friend roles. You can do a bunch
none of that,
them.
But leading men. Like they they deteriorate at a certain point.
They come and go.
They come and go. And leading man, by the way, is it's the same sort of weird ideal as like, listen, okay, I don't have anything against Blake Lively. I think she's adorable. Her dad was the only acting teacher I ever had in the early 90s. Her dad, Ernie Lively, who was a wonderful guy. But you know, I watch Green Lantern and I'm like, Blake Lively is a fighter pilot? Really?
Yeah,
really?
Exactly.
You know, and so it's like the ideal of the leading man or the leading woman is just so unattainably hot that, you know, like when I would hear like you're not leading man, I'm like, well, yeah. That's like 0.00001% of people.
Yeah, no, it's silly. I'm happy. And I've sort of bounced back doing I've played the lead role in things and then played obviously a one of the leads and all of it, and I think that there's fun in being able to kind of go back and forth. If you're a leading man, you can't necessarily play that character part, you know.
No,
you are what you are, which is good, you know. I'm gonna switch bank accounts with Taylor Lautner, but I don't even know, is he a leading man at this point?
I think so, right? He was a leading shark boy, but I definitely think that the sort of quirky funny guys, you know, they may not, you know, it's like, you don't, you may not necessarily score with like the young, you know, like the 19-year-old girls who want the bad boys, but you don't want to date them anyway. But like, But as people get, as women get a little bit older, I think they start to realize, like, no, I kind of think I do want the guy who's a little introspective and funny rather than the sort of empty shell of the that face.
Yes, that is why we get laid so much, Chris.
Wait, what? We do?
Oh, damn it.
Joel, what formula have you stumbled upon? When you're shooting Avatar, really 2 years?
Yeah, you know, and we're doing two more of them. We're doing them back to back. This is no secret. This is all announced. My assumption is that because we have all the technology, that we're going to be able to. It's going to be a shorter period. It's not going to be 5 years of shooting.
Right.
So we're going to be able to kind of because they're back to back, and we have it. The world is built, and the technology is all there because we sort of went through getting that technology to what it is. You know, there's going to be, I mean, it's not going to be short, but it's not going to be as long as I think the first one. This is my assumption. This is all it's all still in Jim's head, and he controls the entire, every, you know, idea and principle of anything. So I'm speculating as anybody would be at this point.
But they destroyed Home Tree. I saw it.
I know. But there's so much you can do on that.
What? Room.
Yeah.
You know, every time James Cameron's come on Attack
there's
of the
many
Show,
home trees.
There's many, many home trees. There's other Na'vi even.
I know. And we met them.
Yes.
People forget that. They're like, well, what are you going to do? You're just going to be with that tribe? You know, I mean, there's so much that goes on in that movie that you forget that we've introduced you to tribes.
It's a whole fucking planet.
And it's hard to get a, you know, I think that he actually did a good job of dipping into the. Oh, really? Oh, really? Unbelievable.
Oh, he's a xylophone fanatic, so he loves the marimba.
Yeah. I do.
Yeah. You're dipping into this into the world, but if you spent too much time there, then you're just like thinking about that. You're taking a story from this world, but the ideas that could come, and I wish that I could tell you anything. I wish that I knew a lot of what was coming up, but I don't. So it's not like I'm hiding things. But you know, it's expansive. You can do anything you want. You can be in outer space. You can be in the water. You can, you know, and
I gotta say, I had always heard stories like, oh, Jim Cameron, you don't want to be on his bad side. Every time he's been on Attack of the Show, he's been fucking awesome and like. And made fun of himself and joked, and he seemed like a cool guy.
Yeah, he's just a big nerd, like you and me. Like he loves what he does, and you know, he's. Of course, when you're walking into one of these jobs, you have speculations and ideas of things that you've heard along the way. But you know, I've been on movie sets where within a couple weeks. People are screaming at each other, and you know, in 2.5 years there was never any issue, and that's kind of amazing. 2.5 years worth of work, you know, and especially you're dealing with a guy who's there before everybody's there in the morning, leaving after everybody's leaving at night. You know, he's one of the most admirable people that I've ever met.
As an actor, how do you? It almost feels like there's a new. Breed or at least a new mindset of acting, but maybe it's just like theater where you weren't immersed in the scenery, but just to be on a green, to basically have nothing but one color in every direction and little dots on everyone, and but you still have to create these real moments.
Well, I actually liked it because and I noticed I hadn't done theater for a while. I did a show at Laguna Playhouse. That's the last thing I did. It was probably 7 years ago. I liken it a little bit to black box, being back in black box theater, like a because really all you're imagining everything. You know, if you go see a play in a black box theater, they don't even have a set really.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a few chairs and, you know, maybe like a curtain and the idea is you're in a hotel room or you're in a whatever. And so that's really what we were going with. You're in a giant stage. And the idea is you had to be in this realm, whether it was Home Tree or wherever it was. And I liked that. And I think, you know, especially for like Zoe and Sam with these emotional, intimate scenes that they're doing in these ridiculous outfits, it really kind of helps because, look, the joke's over after a half an hour being in these outfits. Like, we all look the same in them, so who cares, right?
you know, it's weird, and you got to put these funny little, you know, suits. They look like wetsuits with helmets. We mm-hmm. look like drunk triathletes or something. You know, but you know, after a day, you're over it, and you're just acting, and there's something really freeing about it, because you don't have to worry about where your lights are. You're not having to hit a mark. It's very free. It's just kind of being in this world and just
green box.
Two people.
Green box theater.
Green box theater.
That's
except
what it
nothing's
is.
Green.
That'd
there's
be a,
there's no green screen.
That'd be a great play, actually, if you came out and it was all green and you had those on and you were just... You were the play was that you were shooting a thing.
Wait a minute, that is true. Back in the day, there was green screen behind motion capture, wasn't there?
Yeah. Oh, is there not in this? Is there not in this?
No,
we never did a green. I mean, we had a little bit of green screen through Windows,
but
it was all
exactly. You're just capturing your motions.
Yeah. It's a big giant gray space.
That's right.
It could be purple. It could be. It doesn't matter.
I'm an idiot.
They're not the Star Wars trilogy.
They're not compositing in anything. They're just taking you and basically pulling you into Tron world.
So. There's, you know, like this rig that you have above you here, this lighting rig, instead of there being lights, there's like 250, 300 infrared cameras.
Right.
And those infrared cameras are looking at what's going on
and just capturing all of it. Yeah,
where we're moving. And so if my fingers are moving back and forth, it's capturing that as data. Putting it into, now we can see it live as well.
Of course.
It's capturing it as data, putting it into a bunch of computers. And then that information goes over to Weta, who then does all the work and makes it look like you and I are sitting here.
I don't know why. Yeah, the funny thing is I do understand how motion capture works, but for some reason in my head, I was like, oh, yeah, no, they're on a green stage, and then the background is key. No, you're not keying anything because you're not.
Photos you've seen of the lab when they're in the lab scene, and like Sigourney Weaver standing there, and they have part of the lab built, and then the rest of it's blue.
Right, yeah. That's the live
action.
That's
what you're thinking of.
That's what we did in New Zealand. We shot, you know, part of this in New Zealand, and that's all live action. There's very little green screen, but there you know, was some through windows and stuff. You know, like when we're in the lab, it's, you know, if you see a window, it's then, you know, obviously being comped into the avatar to Pandora.
You must have fucking lost. I mean, the first time I ever saw myself, a voiceover I did for a cartoon. I was fucking blown away, but to see Avatar for the first time.
It's funny, I think that my Avatar plays really well because I have big features, a big nose, big ears, like, you know, like it really looks like me. There's some Avatars that I think looked more like their person, and the emotion was always there, so it didn't matter, like, but there's some that just looked more like their person. I think Sigourney and I really had the features to make that work.
Yeah.
She has very pretty, beautiful features. I have the big goofy features. So it worked for us. But I, you know, it's nuts. And especially in the world where it's even different than a cartoon, because you're capturing every time my eyes move, every wrinkle on my face, you know, when I scrunch my face, all of that is captured, right? So they're taking every piece of information and putting it into that, you know, to that avatar. So it's not just like they're not mocking up whatever feeling, you know, overall feeling you're having. They're just using exactly what you did. It's almost just like taking your exact thing, the way that you acted it, and putting it on to
future of film. Just like Angelina and Beowulf, future of film. Like, doesn't matter if she's 60 years old. They just mocap her and then like, oh, she looks 22.
Yeah, I hope not. I don't want to. I don't think it's ever going to get there.
It probably will.
You think?
Yeah.
That we're just going to come into rooms like this.
I don't think it'll be that prevalent, but I think it'll be another genre, just like animation, computer animation.
There was a movie that was, if I remember,
Sky Captain in the World Tomorrow.
No. Yes, that's always on the tip of my tongue. There was a movie in the early 80s, maybe 79, 80, 81, called The Looker with Albert Finney. And that was part of the plot of the movie was that actors were scanned into computers. It was a very analog approach to what is actually happening now. But then there was a whole murder mystery, and it was a weird thing. But
I love Albert Finney.
Ahead of its time. The Looker, probably not a great movie, but I remember it as being great because I haven't seen it since I was a kid. And remember, kids are stupid.
Kids are dumb.
I feel like there should be a nice. It can complement the live action actual feature world. There can be fun events. I feel like Avatar was more of an event
than it was just a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do this over and over again, you know, first of all, they do. They make other motion capture movies, and I'm obviously biased, but I don't think that they have the same effect. That's something like, I mean, you take that long to do something.
You hear that, Robert Zemeckis? You hear it?
A lot of these, but I love those movies. There's nothing against those movies, but a lot of some of these motion capture movies are made, you know, in 30 days or whatever.
Right.
We're talking about, you know, close to 3 years of actual, you know, production that was going on to get, and then think about all the years of technology to get to finally being able to make that production. That's a long time to put into something. You know, you almost deserve to have it successful at that point.
Yeah. That could have been. I mean, again, I just can't fathom if it had failed. Like that would have been the Titanic.
Yeah.
Going under. I mean, yeah. It just
would have been Cutthroat Island in space.
It was or Howard the Duck. That's what going I was. Back to your Zemeckis.
Oh, that's right. That's crazy.
I tried to watch 10 minutes. I watched 10 minutes of Howard the Duck the other night. I was like, well, how bad could it have been? I haven't seen it in a long time.
Real bad.
Oh, it's not good.
Wait, that was after Back to the Future.
It was. I think it was the next one after Back to the Future.
Zemeckis has a lot more swings and misses than we realize.
I mean, listen, you know what? I respect the shit out of the fact that he tried to do a really cool thing. But it just wasn't well written, and there were a lot of like duck puns in it.
Yeah, what was the story? Why
basically,
did he talk?
I mean, it was based on a comic.
Yeah.
And Howard the Duck is in a parallel universe that is an egg-shaped world, which if you understand anything about gravity or just the dynamics of planet, I mean, it's just doesn't even make sense, but it's fine. It's a comic book. And so he gets sucked into our universe, and then there's just this whole weird, like, half-assed explanation of how it happens with Jeffrey Jones and these dark overlords of the universe, and Howard is basically a little person in a duck suit, and he's very waddly, and he knows quack foo, which is a marsh. It's just like, it's so, I mean, Leah Thompson was hot as shit, but the rest of it was just like, oh my God, another quack pun. Just because a species or a thing lives in a world doesn't mean, it's not like Jetsons or Flintstones where everyone's going to have their name that is tied to that era or what they are.
Yeah.
That's
funny.
I'm Chris Hardflesh. Like, because I'm a fleshy person. So my name is
nice.
But, speaking of hard flesh, though, did you see the Avatar porn parody?
No.
You haven't seen the Avatar porn parody?
No, what is it?
It's a part of that whole series of, you know, this ain't Avatar, this ain't 30 Rock, this or whatever it is. So they made an Avatar porn parody.
I know exactly what you're talking about, yes.
And I watched a couple because I was fascinated by the body. I wanted to see how they did it.
Uh-huh.
So I watched Avatar, Simpsons, and Munsters because they were all body paint based.
Oh, so even the Simpsons one was live action.
The Simpsons one's really fucking creepy because the people who do Marge and Homer's voice do pretty close approximations, and it's just like watching your aunt and uncle fuck.
Ew,
when she's like, I mean, literally, she did this. I apologize for anyone who is language sensitive who's about to hear what I'm about to say, but you wouldn't be listening to the show if you were. But there's one part where Marge just is like, Homer, come eat my fucking cunt. And you're like, no, I feel ill. It's so nasty. But I think they color tinted those people in that one. Okay. But whoever wrote it, they were definitely Simpsons fans because there's like a Mo Cookie Kwan sub story. But anyway, the Avatar one, they did as good a job as could be expected, but they don't do the paint around the genitals, that takes you out of it.
Right.
And then they just start sweating off the makeup, and then you just see like these splotches everywhere. But it's funny. I mean, like you should, you know,
check it out.
You should. I think you should be in the next one.
Yeah, you should come over. We'll watch it together.
We'll just all watch it.
And the Munsters one was so gross too because the guy was doing a great Herman Munster, and while he was fucking Lily, they would cut to his face, and he'd be going,
What? Are you serious?
Weird. So weird.
I need to see that.
You'll never unsee it.
You can't. But I don't even understand that. Why would you like that would ruin these wonderful shows for me. If I watched that every time I'd go back and watch The Simpsons, I'd be thinking about the porn version. Right?
I know. Like, oh. It's bad. So what's next? So you're working on the next couple Avatars?
Yeah, we're doing that, and then I actually have a movie.
Call us when you have something interesting going on.
I mean, geez, exactly. Really, except for the biggest movies of all time.
I have a movie called Janie Jones that just came out this weekend. It's in New York and Seattle. It's in the theaters, but then anybody can get it on VOD, iTunes, cool. Apple, all that stuff. It's a wonderful little movie that Alessandra Nivola and Abigail Breslin mm-hmm. are the leads of, and it's me and Brittany Snow and Elizabeth Shue. And it's just about this guy who finds out that he has a daughter later in life and has to take her on the road of his flailing, you know, almost washed out band that mm-hmm. he's a part of. And it's just a great little piece. It's just it's a really good movie. David Rosenthal, the director, did a great job. It's actually based off of his life. And so if you are hearing this, or if this is going to be airing soon,
yeah,
check it out. I think it's like $7. Or
it's
something.
Sort of a Paper Moon meets Hesher.
Nice.
By the way, I haven't
it's
seen
a little family affair mixed in.
Cool. And I have some great stuff coming out next year. I was in actually with Blake, Savages, Oliver Stone's mm-hmm. new movie. And he is a delight.
Fucking
as well.
Blowing up, Joel. Jesus Christ, dude.
I give a great blowjob.
Yeah, the nerdy kid from Portland makes good.
Yeah.
Listen, but you have to look back, you know, as you sort of look back at the history of your career, you certainly must know, and I don't need to even tell you this, but you're doing the right thing. I mean, like, you know, you book more commercials than anyone else, and then you kind of jump to, like, the biggest movies. I mean, it's kind of, you must sort of feel like, I think I did make the right decision.
To getting out of commercials.
But getting out of Portland. Yeah.
Or getting out of Portland.
Getting out of Portland, yeah.
And then getting out of commercials. I don't know, you know, you kind of, you. It's funny, like, when I was doing it, I was like, oh, this may be the worst decision ever, because, like, you can do commercials forever, right? Mm-hmm.
It's a risk.
It was a risk. And,
to follow
you know,
what you want.
That doesn't necessarily. But that's the thing. I knew that I wasn't going to be happy. Like, I don't want to do commercials for. I would have rather like done dinner theater in Portland, you know, because at least you're kind of acting, doing other, you know, something else besides just hawking cereal.
Follow what you love. Yeah. That's the lesson.
So that's and that was obviously such an honor and such a pleasure to work with. You know, one of our best directors out there. I think that his work is some of the coolest and most creative shit that has gone, you know, in the last 30, 40 years. So, you know, when that all came together and I was honored to be a part of it, that was really cool. I actually took a picture with him. It's so funny. Like, I've never really done that. I'm sure I have pictures of Jim and I, but just randomly because, you know, we had to do event stuff together. But I like, you know, after it was over, I was like, can I have a picture? Like, excuse me, Mr. Stone.
Wow.
Okay, oh, wow. Was he cool about it?
I was like, yo, give me a pic.
Macking on him?
Totally cool. I was macking
on him. Did you scam?
Yeah,
did you finger Oliver Stone?
I did. I actually had him dress up in a cheerleader outfit because I was still trying to figure out who that girl from Foxfire was.
Yeah.
And I was like, is it you, Oliver?
By the way, Oliver Stone, no need to change his name in the Flintstones universe. I'm just saying.
There you go. Wow. There you go.
Oliver Stone Rock. Guys. You don't have to add rock. He's already got stone in the name.
He needs rock.
Joel Moore Rock.
That's awesome.
Look, Sessler's here on the weekends. That's a
what?
Who? Adam Sessler's here on the weekends.
Hey, there is. He's a tireless worker, Adam Sessler.
From the editor
in a t-shirt and jeans.
Yep,
look
that's
at
right.
This.
That's right. Yeah.
This is
that's
how he dresses every day. For us.
In the fucking in the nerd realm, you can go to work in a t-shirt and jeans.
Yeah,
in a snarky t-shirt. And fucking.
By the way,
jeans.
99% of my life, I can be in a t-shirt and jeans. Like, when do you have to? When do I have to dress up?
When you have to go to Sterling Cooper Draper Price to do your big
pitch. When I have to go to hell no. Yeah, any kind of pitches you're doing, you can just show up like this. But you know, when you have to go to a premiere, I guess is when you.
Yeah.
And then when you have to take a nice lady out, that's kind of all the only times you have to or man doesn't you know
either one.
We're not yeah. But yeah, so Oliver Stone and I have the movie that I did with Rita Wilson. It's called Jewtopia, where I play a Jew. Finally, this nose comes to its fruition.
That'll get you in that cemetery.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Jewtopia is gonna finally. I've been waiting for this.
He's not Jewish, but was he in Jewtopia?
Yeah,
let him into Jewtopia.
So and we had a wonderful cast. My fiance was Jamie Lynn Sigler, who is wonderful and a great gal. My parents were
Tom Arnold and I'm sorry, John. There's so many of the Jews that came to play. John Lovitz and Tom Arnold was her father.
Okay.
Cameron Mannheim was her mother.
Awesome.
And so we just had an amazing cast. Rita was my mom, and it was just fun They were all, I mean, seeing those four people in the same like scene is just like, what? That's like classic comedy and classic. Cameron Mannheim is so funny. I never really knew. I mean, you knew that she could do comedy, but dude, it's fun. So yeah, there's some good stuff coming out, and then I get to go. You know, I'm going back to Avatar jail.
Sweet. Well, we're at the end of our show, but thank you for coming on, Joel.
Yeah, dude,
especially
you guys rock.
After a crazy night of Halloween antics.
Not that crazy. I'm just old now, so it hurts more.
You're not old. I'm older than you are, and I'm not ready to admit that I'm old yet. So we're all young. Everybody's young forever.
You age backwards once you stop drinking.
Yeah, Benjamin Buttonism. All right, everyone. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Enjoy your burrito. Enjoy your burrito. Enjoy it.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/nerdist and sign up today to get your free audiobook.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.